Hello, everyone, and welcome back to For the Girls. This is our monthly installment of For the Future, and today we have a very, very special return guest, the one and only Bernie Collins. So if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you may have heard our first interview back with Bernie at the beginning of 2023 now. Bernie's a real one, so she talked to us all the way then. We talked all about her time as the former head of race strategy for Aston Martin, and we picked her brain on all things race strategy. And today, she's crushing it as the strategy analyst and on-air voice for Sky Sports and F1 TV. And she's also just released a book, which we can't wait to talk about, How to Win a Grand Prix from Pit Lane to Podium, the Inside Track. So we have lots to chat about. Thank you so much for being here today, Bernie.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to see you both again.
Yeah, it's so great. We haven't seen you in over a year, although we did say hi to you in Austria last year, which was great. But we want to...
I remember.
Yes. We want to first dive into your role. We love hearing you on air during race weekends. Whenever we're in the Discord and our listeners are chatting live, they're like, oh, it's Bernie. It's so great. So you offer just incredible insights, and especially when things are going crazy with pit stop, tire strategy, weather. How has being... has having been a race strategist kind of mainly uniquely positioned for your role now?
Yeah, so thank you. I think the first thing to say is all the support's been so great. So it's good that people are enjoying it, and it's good that you girls are talking about it in the background. It's been really interesting because I have a lot less data than I had before as a strategist. You know, on the TV, I've got more, you know, closer to the data that the people have at home or that various apps or whatever provide. So there's been that sort of step change in sort of what you know and what you can see, but just trying to bring a little bit of insight, you know, reasons why certain things happen or where we do certain things, or just even like, you know, in Barcelona, I was in the pit lane. I mean, fit to see little things that I think people who have been in the pit lane for a long time just understand. And actually, when you step back a little bit, it's like, oh, that's quite interesting. So just bring some of that insight to people at home. And I think the idea sort of is that every time I bring something new, just even a small thing that people can take away and sort of learn about.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that we get a lot is as people are sort of on ramping onto Formula One, right? Like you watch your first race and you see the cars go around and you see like winners and it's pretty simple. But as you get into it, there is that desire to sort of think like a strategist. So do you have any advice for someone who's like looking to make that next step and things to look out for, ways to kind of approach the race when they're watching it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's different steps of strategy and different things that feed into it. You know, you start with the basics of the circuit. So as you start to look more at circuits or different races, sort of think about the corners and what matches other circuits, what might be similar or dissimilar. You know, you can sort of get a feel for how the circuit layout goes. And then the next sort of step to that is, you know, what the conditions are around you. So is it really hot? Is it really cold? You know, whatever. Those sorts of things begin to be your building blocks of how you think the race might be. And a lot of what we do is we look at what happened historically, you know, like Austria that we spoke about is generally a two-stop. So it's most likely going to stay a two-stop unless there's some big change that swings that. So you can start to look at, you know, what we do in advance of a race. We'd start to look at historically what's happened at that event, you know, the year before or 2 years before. And you start to sort of think about when there's most likely to be a safety car or incidents that have happened in the past or whatever. And that starts to give you some good insight going into the race weekend. So, you know, one of my first bits even now is I remind myself what happened last year, the year before. And that's the first sort of stepping stone into the current season.
That is so fascinating. And yeah, I think the more Tessa and I have watched races over the years, we're starting to think a little bit more like that. But to your point, we only have the data that we're seeing. So you got to make do with what you have, but it's super fun to dig into all of it. So you've recently released a new book, How to Win a Grand Prix. We're so excited to read it. Tell us a little bit about that project and about the process of writing.
So a guy called Morris Hamilton, who's written many sports books, came to me shortly after I joined Sky, actually. So the beginning of last year, the beginning of 23, I guess, with the proposal to write a book. And a bit like, you know, in anyone's life and anyone's career, there's stuff that you take for granted that you don't think is interesting. And then as someone starts to pick at that and go, oh, why do you do this? Or why do you do that? Or so it was a really good process where Morris basically interviewed me and we went through each of the sessions and a bit of a background to get there. And then sort of try and write down the things that I guess very quickly and as time goes on, I will forget. So it's good to do it in a way, the process so early. But yeah, it was really nice for even someone like Morris, who has been around F1 for a very long time, to go, oh, I didn't know that, or I didn't understand that. And so we sort of went through a bit of my background, a bit of the how F1 teams made up, what the different roles are, how the different functions work together. So a bit of insight. And then we start to go through like each session. So what a strategist or a team is trying to achieve, you know, generally in each session and how we're trying to do that. And then build a little bit of like how we're going to the race again. And then we obviously go on to talk about the win we had with Checo, so my only win. And then we talk about my last races and my sort of decision to leave.
Talk to us about the Checo win. I don't think we talked about last time we interviewed you, but would love to hear about that experience, kind of looking back on it now.
Yeah, so surprising because I talk about it a lot. But I think it was in a year, and it is interesting to look back on it versus what you felt at the time. You know, at the time I felt it was a really difficult year. It was the COVID year. Traveling was quite difficult. There was, you know, a lot of restrictions put on us, which obviously you shouldn't complain about because a lot of people in a lot worse situation. And we were getting to travel and we did get a season underway. But it was very hectic then when we did get going. And we got to, you know, Bahrain. We were doing two races at Bahrain. The one that we won was the second one. Mm-hmm. It was a very different track layout. So we had lots of, you know, the big thing without going too in depth in it, the big thing was we had lots of changes to how the race was going to go with no historical knowledge that we'd just spoken about that race. And we hadn't actually moved positions. So when you move from, you know, Singapore to wherever, or, you know, Mexico or Brazil or whatever, when you physically move, it's much easier to change your mindset. Whereas when you don't physically move and the pit wall's the same and the hotel's the same, but the track's very different, it's very hard to change your mindset. And actually as a team, I think we did a really good job of that at that event. And, you know, the car was very good that year, which until I'd started to look back at, I'd sort of forgotten how good the car was just because all of the other struggles that were going on. But the car was very good and we went into the race in a really strong position, but we made some really good decisions, you know, as a team, some good strategy decisions, some good car setup decisions. Checo was driving well, all these things. But the big thing about that race was, so it was the second last race of the season. Checo didn't have a drive for the next year. We knew Sebastian Vettel was coming. And, you know, we did many podiums over the year with Checo, but we never had a win. And he crashed on lap one, which is not the best way to win a race, for sure. But, you know, I talk a little bit about our reactions to that, like how we decided really quickly on that lap, even though everything was okay with the car, that we were going to do a pit stop. Why we did that pit stop, because we thought the other tires would be stronger, which they were. And these sort of things that set in play the motion that went on to win the race. And, you know, things for sure fell in our way. Like, for example, Mercedes had two really bad pit stops. Otherwise they would have won the race, you know, a bit like last weekend, you know. George won the race, but, you know, it's still a win. It still goes down as a win. So yeah, it is about being in that position to win it. And yeah, it's just how we set up for it and how we work together. And, you know, for me, I'd worked with Checo for a very long time. So it was this nice sort of closing scene of that period of time that we'd worked together. And, you know, then the next week it was announced he was going to Red Bull. But at that time, you know, maybe he knew, but we didn't know that.
Right. Quick question about that too. It must feel so, or does it ever feel so overwhelming? I feel like F1 is one of those sports where you don't always see on the front end how many high stakes, fast decisions happen, because it's like all the decisions that you have to make on your end. And then you have to think about what everyone else could be doing. Did it ever just get so like overwhelming?
I think the times that it comes overwhelming is when stuff has really started to go wrong. And you might think that like a crash on lap one as a perfect example of when stuff starts to go wrong. But that wasn't actually something, like, I'd not done anything wrong. The team hadn't done anything wrong. So we were just reacting to an external event. But there are times when you make a bad decision and then you're trying to, like, dig yourself out of it. And that feels really overwhelming and really hard to pull yourself around. Whereas in this case, because we've done so much preparation for it, we always work out what we'd do in a lap one incident. I actually felt the decision was really easy. It came really easy, that decision in that instance. So that race, no, but there are many, many races where in the pit wall you just feel like things keep coming at you really quick and fast. You have to keep making decisions really quickly. And if not on one car, then on the other car. So although maybe from the outside it looks like you only have a single pit stop race and it must be like really simple, like every few laps you should be asking yourself, what would we do now if? What would we do if there was a safety car? What would we do if we had an accident? Like, so every few laps you're like asking lots and lots of questions. So yeah, it is at times really hectic. And, you know, that's something I miss. I miss the pressure of it. But yeah, I've a lot less stress in my life, which is better.
That's nice.
that's a good transition to talk about your new, I don't want to call it your new role because you've been there for like a while now, but your new-ish role. Is there anything unexpected having gone from where you were to this role now?
I think, well, you know, when I took on the new role, it wasn't my intention to go into media or go into TV. But I didn't want to do all the races, which is why I left. So I think the thing has been like everyone's been really welcoming. And the feedback, which I mentioned sort of at the top, but the feedback from the general public has been amazing, you know, to get more insight and more data and stuff. So I think people really love that. And I think that's probably surprised us all. The thing that I'm most surprised about is in the pit lane, you sort of assume as an engineer that when you take on like a media role that the other engineers are going to look at you like you've split up with engineering. You know, it's a bit like, oh, she's on the other side now. And actually, they've all been really appreciative of an engineer's view being out there and things being explained in an engineering way. So actually everyone that I spoke to in the paddock's been like, I know, I think it's really good that we're getting some like engineering insight, and it's easy to sit on TV and go, oh, those idiots don't know what they're doing or whatever. And then it's like they're getting, so I've been surprised at how supportive that side has been actually.
That's so nice to hear because it is so sorely needed, I feel like, to see the behind the scenes and to hear about it from someone who has that mind, because Formula One is such a technical, such a data-driven sport. It's so important to have that being showcased, I think. So I'm so glad that people in the paddock feel that way as well.
So yeah, let's hope it remains.
Yeah, it will.
Well, you're doing an incredible job paving the way. So what race are you most excited for the rest of this season? Are there any major predictions or things that you are looking out for as we head into the second half?
Well, I think that, you know, we started the season I started the season in testing thinking Red Bull car looks quite different. Hopefully that's like a good opportunity for everyone else. And then you get to race one and you think, oh no, it's just the same, you know, everyone, they're so far ahead. And now it's really heating up. So I think that we've got a lot to look forward to for the remainder of the races. You know, the strengths that some of the other cars are showing, I don't think it's just going to be one or two races that suit, like McLaren, for example. I think they're going to be, you know, right there behind, and it's just going to be about who can gain the most. So I think that's really important. Me personally, you know, some of the races, I'm going to Brazil again this year, and I love that track, and it's been quite a while since I was at that track, I think. Yeah, I don't think I was there last year, so I really enjoy that track. It's always like, it's just a very old school track. And then I think, you know, with what's happened recently, that I think the sprints are better this year. I think they're like the schedule's better of them. So you know, in the past people were a bit like, oh, sprint weekend, whereas I actually think it's pretty good, the format they've got now. So yeah, I sort of think Brazil, and you know, there's a good chance that this season if McLaren can keep closing and runs really late into the season, whereas in the past years it's been soon finished in advance of that. So for me personally, Brazil, because I'm going to get to go to that one and I love that track.
That's going to be amazing.
I hope we get a title fight till the end. That we haven't had that in a couple of years. So
exactly.
Like most people, we love a great deal, but what we don't love is jumping through a million hoops just to end up saving a few dollars, especially when it comes to wireless plans. There's so many promos and offers out there, but they do really make it hard to get good quality savings. With Mint Mobile, it really is so easy though. For just $15 a month, you can get a wireless plan when you get a 3-month plan. And the website and activation process are so seamless. Honestly, the longest part of this process is going to be the time that you spend on hold trying to break up with your old provider. To get started, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. There you can see that right now all 3-month plans are only $15 a month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you can bring your old phone number along with all of your existing contacts. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. That's mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions may apply. The summer is full of so many fun activities, and we want to be feeling our best all summer long. That's why we've been loving Happy Mammoth products, especially Estro Control. It helps support our hormones, alleviate any of those pesky PMS symptoms that are coming up before a big summer event, including bloating. And it also just helps us maintain cognitive health, promotes liver function, which is important, and our digestive health as well. Happy Mammoth, who also has the amazing viral hormone harmony supplement, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women, and they make no compromises when it comes to quality. For a limited time only, get 15% off your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's Happy Mammoth, and use the code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning F1 championships is sometimes also what you need to keep your car running day in and day out. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Well, speaking of kind of everything that's going on and how lucky we've been all season with the incredible racing, we do want to shift gears and get your opinion a little bit on all the craziness that's happening at the moment. So I guess to start, is it more fun for you being on this side of things versus being in one team when you're thinking about all the different driver changes and all the different teams and everything that's going on right now?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, when you're in a team, you're so focused on your two drivers, and particularly, you know, like Aston Martin, for example, where I was, both their drivers locked down. So actually, yes, you're interested in the driver market and the changes that's happened. You're trying to keep on top of it, but you've got so much other work going on that you know that's not like your core business. And even like in a race, you're so focused on your two drivers that often you don't see what happens, you know, at the extremities. You see what happens to you and the people around you, but you sort of miss the bigger things. You know, like, for example, last again, like Verstappen and Norris crashing. If I'm so focused on my two drivers, like, yes, I'll be aware it happened, but I won't have watched it as much as I do on the TV. Yeah. So that's nice. It's nice to be like much bigger picture. And then I do find I'm more involved in, you know, the news stories surrounding F1, whereas before I tried to not cloud myself too much with that, then now I'm sort of can really get into it. And so there's that aspect of it, like seeing much more the big picture. And even, like I say, I've been fit to watch a few at home and enjoy it from that like more relaxed atmosphere that I'd not had in like the past 9 years.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You can be a fan again to a certain
degree.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So let's dive into some specifics because we get these questions all the time from our listeners and we're constantly debating on the podcast, but we actually have a pro in our presence. So it'll be, we'd love to get your thoughts on maybe first starting with Carlos, who seems to be kind of the linchpin of the driver, the first domino to fall for some of the rest of these seats. If you were Carlos, where would you go next season?
So I think, you know, what's hot with Lewis setting the whole thing in motion at the very early in the year, it's a really difficult decision because so next year with the regulations the same, you would think that the order is going to be largely the same. You know, there might be a few tweaks, you know, like we're seeing cars closing up. That's obviously going to happen. But the big question mark is 2026 when we get new regulations, new engines. Now, perception is like when we last had a big engine change that Mercedes should be strong. And I mean Mercedes engines more than Mercedes car. Like Mercedes engines should be strong, which ultimately affects Williams, which is where the Williams, you know, discussion has come from. If they can sell that the engine's going to be strong and they're putting the work in motion for that, then can he make it happen? So that's a big question mark. Now, there's obviously discussion around Alpine not running their own engine and maybe taking someone else's engine. So who's that going to be? And so there's so many question marks around things. And I think his difficulty will be that the difficulty for any driver that's trying to sign at the moment is, are you going to sign a car that you think's good next year or take the risk that next year is going to be bad for a car that's good the year after? So I think otherwise, you know, in either direction, you're probably sacrificing a little bit of next year. So it's really, you know, can Williams persuade them that they have enough? I'm not sure. And, you know, can he find a nice little 1 year deal somewhere such that if Max does leave Red Bull, that he can step in there? But equally, if Max is leaving Red Bull, then it's probably because the car's not good enough. So equally, you don't want to step in there. So there's so many question marks. And I really, you know, like when we think of the great drivers that we've had that have scored multiple world championships, they've not only been really good at driving, but they've made these types of decision really well. You know, you think of Hamilton going to Mercedes, you know, Max at Red Bull, equally Vettel at Red Bull. You've had so many drivers that have made these really key decisions. You know, on the opposite end, you've got Alonso, who's appeared to always make really poor decisions in terms of the car he ends up in. So I think this is as important as, you know, being fit to drive well. So I'm glad that I don't have to do it because every team is trying to sell you that their car is going to be the best and their engine is going to be the best. And so it's really hard to get a good gauge on it.
Yeah, it seems like no pressure at all for Carlos, just the biggest decision of his life.
His team needs to be really good.
Well, one thing that we've been talking about, and we kind of talked about this earlier in the week, is he waiting for other things to be set in motion, aka maybe seeing where Adrian Newey could go? So we have our ideas of what could be happening, but where do you think Adrian could be going next?
So I don't know, to be honest, but there's obviously, which maybe we're going to come on to, there's been the announcement that Andy Kyle's going to Aston Martin. You know, is that enough to persuade someone like Adrian to go there? I think that that is another very delicate situation because Aston, for example, have recruited a lot of aerodynamicists who are trying to make their own name. Very, very good guys, very good guys. So if you bring in something like Adrian above them, then you sort of rock the boat a little bit further down. So a part of me wants Adrian to not say anything and then just retire on a boat somewhere fishing at the end of the year and just have had us all year running around after each other. But I think, you know, he is keen to prove himself elsewhere. I think he does love it. You know, you see him on the grid, he's so passionate about it. You know, everyone's talking about the Ferrari deal, which seems to have sort of like petered out. We don't talk about that so much anymore, but you know, that would have been a real, if Fred had been fit to get Adrian on board, I think that would have been, you know, he would have done really well there. So I can't imagine that Carlos is necessarily waiting for the Adrian deal, because I think the 26 regs are going to be more an engine thing. But we don't know. We really don't know. So that, yeah, there's so many unknowns. I'm not giving good answers here. I'm just giving the questions. No,
this is great. I mean, it's bringing up things that we haven't necessarily thought about, and I'm sure others haven't as well. But I agree. I feel like the engines, especially with 2026 in mind, are going to be the key factor. So you talked a little bit about Vettel, and I know you have a great relationship with him. You know him well. Do you think he is coming back to F1 in any capacity? And if so, what would be a good role for him?
So it's weird. I initially said no, because I thought, you know, he stepped away for reasons. I know he's enjoying his family time, I think, which was one of his big reasons for leaving. And then recently I was, 6 months ago, I was pushed on it in a question. I said, you know, anyone, you know, I see myself missing aspects of racing. Yeah. And when you've been a driver since you were very, very young, and you've known only racing, you've been so devoted to it, you must miss aspects of it. You know, it must be very hard to detach that from your life. So I think, to be honest, he's probably, because it's been like 2 years now, I suspect he's not going to come back as a driver, because I think if anything, you know, the driver market's getting very squeezed. We're getting more and more new talent coming through. I think there's not enough room for everyone who's currently in the melting pot there. You know, when we're talking about someone like Carlos Sainz not having a good drive next year, then I think there's question marks. So I don't see him coming back as a driver. Coming back as an ambassador or working with a team, I imagine, and I'm sure he must manage some people, but coming back as a driver coach or manager, I could see him being great at that, because, you know, he has made those big contract decisions, and he does know a lot about which way the cars need to go, in order to give some young drivers some really good advice. I can see him doing that, and ultimately I imagine we'll see him in some sports car things at some point, where he's doing, you know, whatever the case may be, Le Mans or something like that. So yeah, I don't, and you know, maybe that ends up being affiliated with a team. So I think he is enjoying his sort of step away, and he has, you know, even previously been very good at keeping his family out of the limelight of the paddock. And, you know, does he want to change all that again? I don't know. But yeah, you know, it's lovely when you do see him back in the paddock. You know, he was back in Japan last year. So yeah, it will be, I think you girls said you're going to Austin. I think he's meant to be at one of those later on in the year. So yeah, I hope he ends up being involved in a team with a way that really works for him.
Oh, well, we would love to see more of him. We absolutely love him. Question about Aston Martin, since we, you know, that's where you were, and we just talked a little bit about it. What do you think about their really lofty and great goals of trying to be a championship winning team? How soon do you think that could happen? Do you think 2026 is going to be huge for them? Interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. So obviously Lawrence has a lot of ambition, and you could see that right from when Lawrence joined the team. You know, when we started as Force India, very, very small team, not many people, and a very old factory, working in, you know, bizarre conditions for an F1 team, you would say, in terms of just the size of the place. And, you know, he's built a whole new factory. They're working on building a wind tunnel, and they're working on building some engine dyno stuff. So totally, you know, change the team around, and really, really, really big investment. So the ambition is there to bring it to a championship winning team. Now, obviously, that does not happen overnight. And, you know, we're what, 4 years into the project or something already. But they seem to be, you know, with Andy Carl, as we mentioned a moment ago, that's a big hitter from an engine point of view. He really understands the stuff. And although that might seem strange to bring someone who's so specifically engines, you know, over the entire team, he's not designing every component himself. It's about putting the right people in place and getting them working together well, and making the right sort of compromises of the chassis design as well. So, you know, and he's a good technical guy, so he will understand all of that. So it is, I think, with that move in particular, about setting this, they seem to have got a bit lost in some of their upgrades. And if they can start from a top-down structure of improving what they bring to the track, then, you know, definitely the ambition is there. 2026 is going to be an interesting one for them because they're, and correct me when I say this incorrectly, but they're moving to the Honda engine, which I think is correct, which I don't think is necessary. You know, we don't know where that's going to sit, honestly. We don't know where any of the engines are going to sit in the order. The big thing for me with that is they're going to have to start designing their own gearboxes, which they've never done before as a team.
Interesting.
I did gearbox design at McLaren for a while, and it's really complicated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're obviously working at that already to get that in motion. And, you know, I guess hiring some people and building what they need to make that happen. But that for me is quite a, you know, a big thing to take on. And I'm sure they will get the right team together and stuff. I just don't know. And this is not based on anything I've heard. This is just based on having done it in the past. I just don't know if that's going to guaranteed hit the ground running in 26.
Yeah.
So I think it is right for a team to start to do their own components like that. Like not at the moment, they're buying gearboxes from Mercedes, which is allowed, but it means you're restricted to certain geometries that Mercedes run, certain development that Mercedes do. So it's hard to win a championship like that. You need to be having, you know, Honda as an engine partner. You'll need to be a few years into your own gearbox project, and then you've got total control of your own car. Yeah. And that is a way to the front. It just is going to be 2 or 3 years. But I said that a few years ago, and then they came out at the beginning of last year, like really fast. So I don't know, you know, I might be wrong.
No, it's great though. It's so fun to follow. And that's what's so amazing about Formula One. And I think what some people don't understand is it takes a long time to lay the groundwork to become a championship caliber winning team, you know? So we're fingers crossed for Aston Martin, but it feels like they're making the right investments and right personnel. So
yeah, definitely. And I think, like, just to your point, the reason that it takes a long time is you learn from your mistakes, right? So every fault that you find, every accident, every reliability issue, that goes into building something better the next week. So starting from day one, it's hard to bring all that experience together. Even though you bring individual people together, it's hard to bring it all together. So it does take a bit of time to build up that resource.
Yeah. Two quick final rapid fire questions, but hopefully they'll be easy. Your team principal, who are your two drivers if you had to pick?
Oh, any drivers. So probably Verstappen and Norris.
Okay. Are they going to get along?
Yeah, I'm going to make them get along. I'm going to be a real iron fist of management. So there's going to be no... Yeah, I'd forgotten about the Austria. Yeah, they're going to get along somehow magically.
Yeah, if anyone's going to do it, you can do it. Okay, we've asked ourselves this question, but we'd love to hear a strategist's perspective. Would you rather race a rainy race on slicks or a dry race on wets?
Oh, dry on wets.
Okay.
Safer, because, a little slower, but safer.
It'll take a while, but gradually you'll wear the wets down and they will become slick.
Okay.
So you'll have some really, really terrible laps, but then it should get there. Whereas the other way around, you can never make the slick into a wet. Okay. So I think on the whole, the wet on a dry track would be quicker overall. Okay. Like, you'll have some really, really terrible laps at the start.
Spoken like true strategist.
Exactly. Well, Bernie, thank you so, so much. This has been an incredible conversation and so great to see you again, and wishing you all the best for the rest of the season. We cannot wait to read the book, which we'll link in the description. But hopefully we'll see you in Austin or Vegas.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you all for your support.